This is The Guardian.
Hi, my name's Dan Hancocks. I'm a journalist and author, writing and editing for The Guardian and others. And you're about to listen to a long read titled, Is This the World's Most Radical Mayor? About Ada Colau, the mayor of Barcelona and longtime housing activist. I came to write about Ada Colau, the mayor of Barcelona, sort of based on several years of very nerdy interest in Spanish politics and history. And I found myself in sort of the mid-2010s going to Spain quite a lot to write about various sort of upsurges and hyper-local examples of radical politics. You sort of had this big sort of protest movement that was across Spain, really, but really particularly strong in the major cities, in Madrid and Barcelona. And Ada Colau's life before she was mayor of Barcelona was as the sort of main spokesperson for this organization called the PAH, which was a housing activist organization that I think can fairly be described as one of the most successful activist groups in Europe. They prevented the evictions of thousands of families. For this reason, that Ada Colau was sort of already in the forefront of Spanish public life, even before she was ever involved in informal politics. And the period sort of 2012, 2013, 2014, in the run-up to me writing this piece, saw this attempt to take the activist politics of the squares, of the public squares of Madrid and Barcelona and the other major cities, and try and move them inside City Hall, you know, to see if they could make this journey, cross the threshold, and keep their principles with them at the same time. And that's the sort of the tussle that a lot of this piece is about, and that was sort of underscoring a lot of the tensions and arguments around Ada Colau's election as mayor in 2015. Ada Colau is this very charismatic woman, sort of first touched a lot of people's consciousness when she was on TV and began tearing up while giving evidence on the Spanish housing crisis. Looking back on this article now and the context in which it was written, it's really quite striking how different the political climate was across Europe. This is before Brexit. I mean, it's also before Trump. Corbyn has just been elected Labour leader. Most of all, in Spain, it felt like the sort of dawning of a new age of possibility for just a different way of doing things politically. Spain had had the same parties governing ever since Franco had died in the 1970s. And you had this moment from sort of 2014, 2015, when this article was being researched and written, where across the city halls of Spain and also at national government level via Podemos, the new political party, you had this genuinely refreshing attempt to shake up the existing status quo. And these political movements were getting somewhere. They'd come from the grassroots activist movements, the indignados, and from the housing activist that Ada Colau was the spokesperson from. But it was the first attempt to kind of really cross the threshold into City Hall and attempt to do formal politics.
Welcome to The Guardian Long Read, showcasing the best long-form journalism covering culture, politics and new thinking. For the text version of this and all our long reads, go to theguardian.com/longread.
Is this the world's most radical mayor? When Ada Colau was elected mayor of Barcelona, she became a figurehead of the new left-wing politics sweeping Spain. The question she now faces is a vital one for the left across Europe. Can she really put her ideas into practice? By Dan Hancocks. It was the early evening of the 5th of February 2013, and seated among grave-looking men in suits, a woman named Ada Colau was about to give evidence to a Spanish parliamentary hearing. Before saying anything, she began, I'd just like to make one thing clear. I am not an important person. I have never held office or been the president of anything. The only reason I am here is that I am a momentarily visible face of a citizens' movement. Colau was there to discuss the housing crisis that had devastated Spain. Since the financial crisis, 400,000 homes had been foreclosed and a further 3.4 million properties lay empty. In response, Colau had helped set up a grassroots organisation, the Platform for Mortgage Victims, PAH, which championed the rights of citizens unable to pay their mortgages or threatened with eviction. Founded in 2009, the PAH quickly became a model for other activists, and a nationwide network of leaderless local groups emerged. Soon, people across Spain were joining together to campaign against mortgage lenders, occupy banks, and physically block bailiffs from carrying out evictions. 10 minutes into Carlisle's 40-minute testimony, she broke from the script. Her voice cracking with emotion, she turned her attention to the previous speaker, Javier Rodriguez Pelletero, the Deputy General Secretary of the Spanish Banking Association. "This man is a criminal and should be treated as such. He is not an expert. The representatives of financial institutions have caused this problem. They are the same people who have caused the problem that has ruined the entire economy of this country, and you keep calling them experts." When she had finished, the white-haired chair of the Parliament's Economic Committee turned to Colau and asked her to withdraw her very serious offences in slandering Pelletero. She shook her head and quietly declined. The criminal video became a media sensation, earning Colau condemnation in some quarters and heroin status in others. A poll for the Spanish newspaper El País a few weeks later revealed that 90% of the country's population approved of the PAH. The group's work continued. In July 2013, Colau was photographed in Barcelona being dragged away by riot police from a protest against a bank that had refused to negotiate with an evicted family. 2 years later, that image went viral, powered by the extraordinary news that the same T-shirted activist had just been elected the new mayor of Barcelona. On the day of her inauguration, Colau addressed supporters of all ages gathered on the cobblestones in Plaza Sant Jaume, in Barcelona's old town, thanking them for making the impossible possible. Some waved the tricolour of the Second Spanish Republic, which was declared in the very same square in April 1931, its egalitarian ideals buried in the rubble of the Civil War 5 years later. The date of Colau's victory, 24th of May 2015, was to be, in the words of one spray-painted graffiti slogan, a day that will last for years. Colau had been elected mayor on behalf of Barcelona en Comú, a new citizens' movement backed by several left-wing parties. She became the city's first ever female mayor, and Bi Comú, the first new party to gain power after 35 years dominated by the centre-left PSC and centre-right CIU. The date was not only significant in Barcelona. Bi Comú was one of several new groups that had defeated the established parties to win power in 8 major Spanish cities, including Madrid, Valencia and Zaragoza. These new mayors of change became symbols of hope for what progressives in Spain sometimes call la nueva política. It has become commonplace across the Western world to talk of new politics in response to voter apathy, economic crises, corruption and the decline of established political parties. In Spain, however, the phrase has a ring of truth to it. After years of social upheaval following the financial crisis, widespread uprisings against political and business elites have transformed the country's political landscape. Just as the indignados, who occupied Spanish squares in their millions in the summer of 2011, inspired the global Occupy movement, it was in Spain too that this energy was first channeled into political movements capable of contesting elections, such as the left-wing populist party Podemos. Colau has been involved every step of the way, and as mayor of the country's second biggest city, she now possesses real political power, arguably more so than Podemos, which came third in the Spanish general election last December. The question Colau now faces is a vital one for the left across Europe. Can she put her radical agenda into practice? When I first met Colau last autumn, she was in the middle of an unusual transition, adapting from grassroots activism to life as an elected politician. Having started out at Bi Comú's Spartan office, populated by young people hot-desking on laptops, she was now installed in Barcelona's 14th-century city hall with its marble columns, stained glass and Miro statues. Her calendar had been taken over by a succession of official mayoral duties, glad-handing, exchanging gifts and small talk with dignitaries, death by a thousand micro-ceremonies. The demands on her time are especially intense since it is central to Bi Comú's principles and media strategy that the organisation's figurehead stays on the same level as her supporters, taking public transport and attending neighbourhood Bi Comú meetings where possible. In the weeks following her victory, Colau signalled what might be new about the new politics with a series of headline-grabbing reforms. This is the end of a political class removed from the people, she said, cutting expense accounts and salaries of elected officials. She announced she would reduce her own pay from €140,000 to €28,600, slashed the budget for her own inauguration ceremony, and replaced her predecessor's Audi with a more efficient mayoral minivan. She was eventually blocked by political opponents from reducing her salary below €100,000 and has stated that she will donate the remaining sum to local groups. She suggested withdrawing the annual €4 million subsidy to Barcelona's Grand Prix circuit, restored school meal subsidies to the city's poorest children, and levied fines worth a total of €60,000 on banks that owned vacant properties. At the posturing end of the spectrum of political action, she removed a bust of the recent King of Spain, Juan Carlos I, from the City Hall's council chamber. She also spent a night out with a homeless charity, helping to count how many people were sleeping rough in Barcelona, almost 900, met mobile phone company workers who were on strike, joined a demonstration against a controversial immigrant detention centre in the city, and returned to speak at the very same local assemblies that had brought Bicomu to power in the first place. These initial moves encouraged Colau's supporters, but the challenge most likely to define her time in office will be taming Barcelona's tourist industry. In its transformation since the 1992 Olympics into the self-styled capital of the Mediterranean and the fourth most visited city in Europe, Barcelona has become a victim of its own success. In the old town, evictions are common, a direct result of rents being driven up by tourist apartments, and residents complain that their neighbourhoods have become unlivable. "You really can't walk down some streets in the summer," one local told me, as in, you physically can't fit. The scale of the problem is made clear by a few simple figures. In 1990, Barcelona had 1.7 million visitors making overnight stays, only a little more than the population of the city. In 2016, the number has risen to more than 8 million. In the intervening period, infrastructure and accommodation have been improved and expanded, pavements widened, signage increased, tour buses rerouted. But the problem is a fundamental one. Barcelona is a relatively small city. It is not London, Paris, or New York. Major attractions such as the Sagrada Familia and Parc Güell are located in the middle of residential neighbourhoods, not surrounded by the open space they need to accommodate millions of visitors. As tourism has exploded, radically reshaping the city, the question of who Barcelona is ultimately for has become increasingly insistent. "Any city that sacrifices itself on the altar of mass tourism," Colau has said, "will be abandoned by its people when they can no longer afford the cost of housing, food and basic everyday necessities." "Everyone is proud of Barcelona's international reputation," Colau told me, "but at what cost? There's a sense that Barcelona could risk losing its soul. We need to seek a fair balance between the best version of globalization and keeping the character, identity and life of the city. This is what makes it attractive. It is not a monumental city, and it is not a world capital like Paris. Its main feature is precisely its life, its plurality, its Mediterranean diversity." "We want visitors to get to know the real Barcelona," she said, "not a Barcelona theme park full of McDonald's and souvenirs without any real identity." Even in the last few years, the change in Barcelona's old town is noticeable. The area is no longer dominated by locally owned restaurants decked with laminated pictures of sangria and tortillas, or little shops selling matador costumes and Gaudi tea towels. Now its narrow cobbled streets are watched over by American Apparel, Starbucks, H&M, Disney and Foot Locker. Every now and then, as you stand in the Barrio Gothic and wonder whether the locals who refer to Barcelona as a tourist theme park are being hyperbolic, a bike tour, if you're particularly unlucky, a Segway tour, will spin around a tight corner and you'll have to jump to avoid being body slammed into an oversized paella dish. While visitors come for the Gaudi mosaics, alfresco drinking and tapas, there is another side to Barcelona's culture, a history of barricades, pitched battles with police, and deeply held local neighbourhood identities that long predates the rise of the tourist industry. In the early 20th century, this rebellious side of the city earned Barcelona the epithet La Rosa de Foc, the Rose of Fire. It was there that the radical trade union, the CNT, was founded. By 1919, it had more than 250,000 members in Barcelona alone. That same year, a 44-day general strike held in the city secured for Spain the world's first national law on an 8-hour working day. Colau is not shy about expressing her respect for this heritage. She was born in 1974, in the twilight months of Franco's dictatorship, only a few hours after the execution of the prominent Catalan anarchist Salvador Puig Antich, an event that Colau has described as formative. Last autumn, she laid a wreath in honour of the anniversary of the execution of Catalan anarchist and educationalist Francesc Ferrer I Guàrdia. It was, she said, thanks to the legacy of figures such as him, that she, as an activist, rebel and Catalan, could become mayor of the city. Colau grew up in Barcelona's Guinardó neighbourhood, playing in the streets with her three sisters and other local children, the idealised Mediterranean upbringing where public space is everyone's living room. She grew up in a politicised household and participated in her first protests at the age of 15 against the First Gulf War. She went on to study philosophy at the University of Barcelona and never considered becoming a politician. Later, she studied theatre for a year. When she was 27, she even appeared in a short-lived sitcom about three sisters called Dos y Una. She was the Una, the eldest of two twins. It was at the turn of the millennium, as the post-Cold War radical left began to coalesce around a series of anti-globalisation protests in the US and Europe, that Colau became more actively involved in politics. She recalls speaking on the telephone to friends in Genoa during the 2001 anti-G8 protests, after a police raid had left 63 protesters hospitalised. It is this period, she believes, that laid the groundwork for Spain's new wave of left-wing politics. I got involved in 2001 with anti-globalisation movements against the war in Iraq and the World Bank and global warming, she told me. For hundreds of thousands of people, this was the beginning of their involvement with politics, and I still see the influence of this period at work today. Colau spent the first years of the new millennium embroiled in activism, protesting and campaigning against wars, poor housing and gentrification. While working for the PAH, she developed her distinctive style of speech, which rests on a sincere, if carefully crafted, populism. She has said she wants to feminise politics and avoids macho or old left rhetoric. It is hard to imagine her saying, as the Podemos leader Pablo Iglesias once did, that heaven is not taken by consensus, it is taken by assault. Instead, in speeches and interviews, Colau returns again and again to a few central themes: human rights and democracy, participation, inclusion, justice. When I used the word radical at one point, she challenged it. But what is radical? We are in a strange situation where defending democracy and human rights becomes radical. A key part of Colau's appeal is that, unlike many politicians, she is not afraid to show emotion. The famous 2013 parliamentary hearing was by no means the only time she has cried or been close to tears on camera. At rallies during the mayoral election campaign, she used the whole stage, gesticulating and speaking passionately about the city's most marginalised residents, women and children and pensioners and migrants and the unemployed, only letting herself uncoil from the performance once it was over and the BComu supporters were on their feet. In person, she is the same, speaking quickly and seriously, not seeming to pause for breath. Then, when the message is delivered, she relaxes, often breaking out in laughter. When I met her on BComu's symbolic 100th day in power, it was the middle of the Mercè, Barcelona's week-long autumn cultural festival. That week it genuinely felt as though the doors of the City Hall had been thrown open to the people, normally protected by security guards. The courtyard inside was thronged with festival performers and their families, in traditional Catalan folk costumes of red shirts and white trousers. There were piles of rucksacks on the floor, excited children darting about, and a baby being changed on an ancient oak bench. From the moment of her election victory, Colau had echoed the Zapatistas by promising to govern by obeying the people. And that night she delivered a speech of studied humility. "Never trust in our virtue or our ability to represent you completely," she told her supporters. "Throw us out if we don't do what we said we'd do. But be conscious that we can't do everything on day one." It was a response to the paradox at the heart of Spain's new left-wing politics, which depends upon a small number of charismatic leaders. In Barcelona, for instance, the remarkable collective victory against the establishment by a crowd-funded citizens platform, formed only 11 months before the election, was built around the appeal of the one woman whose face was on all the posters. In one of her most high-profile speeches of the election campaign at a rally in September 2014, Colau addressed the grey areas in Spain's new populism. They will ask us, "Who are you?" Let's not be so arrogant as to say we're everyone, but we are the people on the street. We're normal people. We're simple people who talk to our neighbours each day, who, unlike professional politicians, use public transport every day, work in precarious jobs every day, and who see how things are every day. Colau still lives in a modest flat near the Sagrada Familia with her husband, Adria Alemani, with whom she wrote two books about the housing crisis, and her young son, Lucas. With Gaudi's gargantuan basilica at its heart and 3 million visitors a year filling the pavements of an otherwise quiet residential neighbourhood, it is an area that exemplifies Barcelona's identity crisis.
This is The Guardian. This is The Guardian.
As Colau has found out, the problem with being the people's champion is that not all the people want the same things. In one part of Barcelona's old town, tensions over tourist excess have spilled over into outright hostility. Tucked away from the sea, Barceloneta's narrow streets are lined with blocks of flats displaying the barrio's blue and yellow flag, with a crest featuring a lighthouse and a boat. These days, they are often accompanied by another popular flag bearing the stenciled Catalan slogan Cap Pis Turistic, no tourist flats. For centuries, Barceloneta was a traditional working-class fishing district until the beach on its perimeter underwent extensive regeneration for the 1992 Olympics. The area is now lined with expensive surf shops, rickshaw drivers, sellers of tourist tat and beach volleyballs. Locals complain that the cost of living has shot up, and the hordes of tourists often make for bad neighbours. Tourist misbehaviour peaked in Barceloneta one Friday morning in August 2014, when three exuberant young Italian men spent several hours wandering around the area naked. Photographs of the streaking holidaymakers quickly circulated on social media, and a series of anti-tourist protests followed. When I visited last year, the area was plastered with posters put up by the City Hall asking in several languages, "Do you know if you're in an illegal tourist apartment?" Another in the same series instructed, "Don't use the street as a toilet." Colau's stated priority is to move Barcelona away from what she considers massified tourism, with no thought for sustainability, strategic planning or input from the public. Until now, all we have had were private initiatives doing what they wanted, Colau told me. This has led to a model that is out of control. She added, "We suffered the same short-sighted model here with the real estate bubble. We are trying to prevent the same mistakes happening again with tourism." Soon after her election, Colau announced a year-long moratorium on new hotels and tourist apartments, disrupting over 30 planned hotel projects. In March 2016, the City Hall extended the ban and is proposing to direct any future expansion to the periphery of the city, away from the overburdened old town. City Hall has also fined Airbnb and its rival HomeAway €60,000 each for advertising illegal tourist apartments, ones that had not been registered and were therefore not necessarily paying taxes or fees. In April, City Hall announced it was looking into a specific tourist tax levied on those not making overnight stays, cruise ship passengers and day trippers. Many of these initiatives have come from Ada Colau's new Tourism Council, which features input from ordinary Barcelonans as well as the industry. Even so, many locals are still unhappy. On the first day of the Messe, as the crowds gathered in Plaza Sant Jaume for Colau's ceremonial opening of the festival, the Barceloneta Neighbourhood Association staged a protest. The locals, many of them accompanied by young children, faced the City Hall waving blue and yellow flags, banging drums and blowing whistles. "Life in Barceloneta has become unbearable," Kiko Casas bellowed to me above the din. He and his fellow activists are campaigning for a total abolition of tourist flats in Barcelona. "Speculation has led to so many rent rises," said Casas, "and now we can't afford to live in the neighbourhood our grandparents lived in. Meanwhile, the drunken tourists and their parties make ordinary life unbearable." On a demonstration the previous week, the Barceloneta Neighbourhood Association had marched to the city's Airbnb offices, wheeling a cannon alongside them, a theatrical homage to the area's marine heritage, and fired a fake shot at the apartment rental company. On that occasion, they had singled out Colau too, with a homemade banner reading, "Mayor, 3 months without solutions. Well?" It was the first time Carlyle's core supporters, or at least one strand of them, had faced up to their champion. On the other side of the old town from Barceloneta lies the Raval, another area with a long history of poverty and strident working-class solidarity. One afternoon I attended a community discussion event here, which took place on ground where a factory once stood. The empty plot was due to have a luxury hotel built on it. Instead, the site was occupied by local activist groups who had turned it into a social space, covered in graffiti art decrying police brutality and city branding of the I Heart Barcelona variety. A man named Manel Aissa took the mic to explain that he grew up on this very street in the 1950s, where his dad ran a bar populated by duckers and divers, radicals and sex workers. He explained that the week before, he had been walking through the Raval when a group of young German tourists approached him and asked in faltering Spanish, "Is this a good area to invest in property?" He managed a laugh, recalling the cheek of the question. "I told them where to go. Away." But the difficult truth is that for many Barcelonans, not just a wealthy elite of cruise ship owners, hoteliers and landlords, the tourist economy has been a source of salvation. For the majority of people sharing their home, it's about making ends meet, Ricardo Ramos, spokesman for the Barcelona Association of Neighbours and Hosts, explained over lunch near Sagrada Familia. "We have pensioners who are trying to pay the mortgage or the rent and live on €400 a month, and that's impossible in Barcelona. Some of these people would be on the streets within 2 months without that extra income." Ramos's organisation, which was founded in April last year, is supported by Airbnb. Its members have organised their own protests with slogans written in English such as "Tourists come home" instead of "Tourists go home." Ramos explained that as well as helping home sharers, the type of tourism encouraged by companies such as Airbnb generates income for small shops located outside the obvious tourist centres and provides a more local and authentic experience than a fleeting walk around La Rambla and a night's sleep in an international hotel chain. Airbnb points to a 2014 study that found that more than half of the companies Barcelona hosts had used the platform to help pay their mortgage, rent or bills, in the process generating €128 million and creating more than 4,000 jobs in the previous year. Like his opponents in Barceloneta and the Raval, Ramos argued that if Colau were really of the people, she would be supporting them. "Given that Mayor Colau comes from a socialist background, I don't understand why empowering citizens to take action to avoid being evicted from their homes is so difficult to understand. We should be on the same side. Home sharing and tourism has been stigmatised in Barcelona. Some groups of neighbours have been out on patrols at night to see where the tourist flats are, and Mayor Colau doesn't stop it." I think Mayor Colau doesn't understand the difference between being in an election campaign and being in power, Ramos continued. "When you are in the campaign, you talk to your audience, that's fine. But once you are in power, you rule for all citizens, regardless of whether they voted for you or not." With a minority government of only 11 of 41 councillors, Colau and Bicomu have required support from other parties to get new legislation passed. They have also faced hostility from the business community and media, not to mention an intransigent local bureaucracy. The threat that Bicomu's enemies posed to stable governance was clear from the outset. Even before the mayoral inauguration, Jean Delors, the political representative for the Barcelona police, resigned in protest at the election of Colau. "For them, there are no decent police," said one police spokesman. "We're all torturers." Bicomu has encountered substantial opposition in the council chamber from established parties keen to block its more radical reforms and expose its inexperience. In October, two parties which were nominally allied with Bicomu, the centre-left PSC and the left-wing Catalan nationalists ERC, voted to reverse Colau's moratorium on new hotel building. It was renewed in March nonetheless. The following month, the PSC leader Jaume Collboni described the measures as indiscriminate, accusing Colau of ideological purism and profound ignorance of the terrain in a complex city like Barcelona. He proposed that the novices in Bicomu would benefit from his party's governing experience and that only a co-governing pact with the PSC would stabilise the extreme weakness of Colau's administration. On the 10th of May, Colau finally relented and announced just such a pact. Bicomu will be bolstered by the PSC's four councillors and Collboni will become deputy mayor. Perhaps more importantly than votes in the City Council chamber, the PSC will give Colau's administration access to a network of contacts, which includes influential bureaucrats, union officials, commercial and civil society associations. As with any governing coalition, behind-the-scenes politicking and media spin will be vital in determining which party is judged to have been the winner from the deal. In the short term, it is hard not to see it as a defeat for Colau. In January 2015, 4 months before the election, she had ruled out just such a pact with the PSC, whom she called one of the parties of the regime, and as such, part of the problem, not the solution. Some activists are sceptical about what this compromise will do to BComu. According to an article published last week in the left-wing newspaper Diagonal, the PSC pact is like getting a dominatrix into bed with the hope they will assume a submissive role. Events in Barcelona in the last few days risk further alienating some of Colau's core supporters. The eviction of squatters from a former bank that they had turned into a social centre led to violent clashes with riot police. She angered some people by refusing to get involved in what she said was a private dispute, although she has also offered to find the squatters an alternative site. These kinds of setbacks raise a bigger question for BComu supporters and those of other new parties such as Podemos. Was it all worth the effort? Might they just have been better off lobbying for change from outside their various parliaments? For some experienced observers, taking activist politics into the institutions of power was always going to be a challenge. Oriol Nello is Professor of Urban Geography at the Autonomous University of Barcelona and a former PSC representative in the Catalan Regional Parliament. In last year's municipal election, he backed Barcelona en Comú. Grassroots activists should not think of City Hall as a fortress, he told me over coffee in a cloistered square in the Raval. It's better to think of it as a very complex arena in which you can manage to conquer certain positions, knowing that these institutions are more likely, a lot of the time, to give way to other pressures coming from the economic sector or from business. But that doesn't mean you can't do anything within the institutions, he smiled. You can change plenty of things. For Nello, Colau's determination to rebalance the effects of tourism in favour of Barcelona's citizens is one example of a reform that is both essential and achievable. In the summer of 2016, Spain's political scene is in a strange purgatory. The old is dying, and the new cannot be born. The rise of new parties on the left and right culminated in an inconclusive general election in 2015 without a decisive victor. 6 months of coalition talks resulted in stalemate, and so Spain will go to the polls again at the end of June. The results are likely to be equally unclear. In the meantime, it is Ada Colau and her fellow mayor in Madrid, Manuela Carmena, who remain the most powerful proponents of the new politics in Spain, a country where, despite a short period of economic recovery, unemployment remains above 22%. Even after the compromise with the PSC, there is a sense among her supporters that Colau's experience fighting for housing reform, occupying banks and blocking evictions with the PAH has given her the confidence and perseverance to see the project through. It is, she told me, a collective made up of the poorest people in Spain, people who have lost everything, not just their homes or their money, but their hopes for the future. With nothing left to lose, they got organised, formed close bonds, supported new friends, joined in civil disobedience together, fought and kept fighting, and they won. It's an experience I will never forget in my entire life, Colau said, because it taught me the most valuable lesson I have ever learned, which is that we will be whatever we want to be. To have a society that is more just truly depends on us and on whether we get involved or not.
For more Guardian long reads in text and a selection in audio, go to theguardian.com/longread or find us on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/theguardianlongread.
This is The Guardian.